Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Previously on the Wake Up Call with KB and Andy.
He was a busy, busy man with NFL draft coverage over, and I believe a little bit of, I don't know if it was dad's pitch or what was going on at Grand Park, but Joel A. Erickson did a little parent duty as well on Saturday morning before he got back into draft coverage for the Star, and he joins us now on the Payless Liquors hotline. Joel, good morning to you. Are we doing dad? It was a dad's pitch. Do I have that right, or are we starting to throw the kids a little?
My son is in 7U, so it's still coach's pitch. Luckily for the kids, I'm not pitching. I'm more there to my role is to work with the catchers, and I get the ball back to Chad, who does a great job pitching for our team.
There we go. Shout out to Chad. I went to my nephew's game. He's also 7. The dad has to use some like catapult contraption that looks like a Purdue engineering student invented this in 1973. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world. Can we not just have the dad's pitch? Why do we need a machine?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. Like one of the things that Chad does really well is he gets his arm kind of elongated back. It gives the kids a chance to pick up the ball early. Like that doesn't work with a catapult machine.
No,
it's not the same thing. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it looks like something you see in Sandlot to try to retrieve the ball. Honestly, is what I'm seeing with some of these pitching machines. Shifting gears, Joel, to the draft. I guess I'm going to start a little bit outside of the box. Day 3 pick that will play the most in 2024.
Oh, that's a good one. I'm going to go Jalen. Well, yeah, I'm going to go Jalen Carlisle.
And if you don't mind, fill in a little background for our audience that, you know, we're not totally up to date on the Missouri safety turn linebacker.
Yeah, Jalen Carlisle, they picked him to play. He's a safety. They see him as a linebacker. He's got really long arms. He kind of fits I was kind of comparing him to Ronnie Harrison, but like athletically, they kind of see him as like EJ Speed. And what I was thinking in terms of playing the most from the day 3 picks is there's not really an obvious strong side linebacker to me. You know, Grant Stewart has kind of played that role in the past. He's generally been more of a special teams guy. You could probably have somebody. They played EJ Speed there to start. And Carlisle, he's really fast. He's long. They think he can play in the box. I just think that there's maybe a spot there in the strong side linebacker now is a sub role essentially. But you can still get, 250, 300 snaps there. And then, if something happens to Ronnie Harrison at some point, I think we saw that they'll give that coverage player at linebacker some extra snaps too. So I think that's my bet.
Joel A. Erickson with us here from the Star. We're talking some Colts with him. The draft, maybe a little quiddy pay and everything else. He joins us on the Payless Liquors hotline. I guess big picture, we have the first round on Thursday. We take a deep breath. Second and third rounds on Friday. It wraps up on Saturday. So you've had, Sunday, all day Monday and this morning to kind of digest the draft. What did you make of Ballard's draft? Did you think overall it was a good draft? And I guess how have your thoughts changed maybe from the weekend to now as we sit here on Tuesday morning?
So one of the things I've been thinking about is rather than sort of like ticking off positional needs, I kind of felt like what Chris Ballard did, especially in the first four rounds, was really target the areas of the draft that he thought the most talent was in. Offensive line, I don't think any of us really had offensive line as you got to grab that. In the first four rounds, I think we can all see it given some of the that Will Frost and Ryan Kelly are slated to be free agents next season, but I don't know that we put it as a priority. The flip side of that though is that was a position group that Ballard told us all along was super deep in the draft, and rather than tick off needs, I think it was like we're going to take the best swing at players that we think are going to be good, and they do have some cap space available. They can fill some of those other spots. the inverse of this is not taking a running back. They're obviously down one running back with Zach Moss having moved on to it to get, you know, a pseudo starting role in Cincinnati. But Chris Ballard's answer on that was essentially they thought the depth at that class was not great this year, and so they held off. I think that drove this draft maybe more than need did.
Yeah, I want to go there for just a second, Joel. Joel A. Erickson from the Stars with us here on the Payless Circus Hotline. I just posted something to our site, you know, winners and losers from the 2024 draft for the Colts. You know, guys on the roster that benefited from the draft, guys on the roster that didn't benefit. And one I thought about was Jonathan Taylor. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they didn't draft a running back. Does that all of a sudden mean that, like, Taylor is going to be a 22-carry guy a game when healthy? Or does it mean, you know, he's a 22-carry guy and maybe that's not great for him in terms of, you know, lasting 17 games? Do you have strong conviction either way on that or anybody, I guess, that stands out from a winner or a loser standpoint?
Yeah, I like what you're saying there about, like, because he is going to be the way it's set up right now, he is going to get a ton of carries, and we saw that last year. But we have talked in the past about how do you keep carries off of him, and is there a way to keep the workload from piling up on him? And they don't really have that guy. It's also probably a win for Trey Sermon, getting a chance to be the primary backup, at least as it sits here right now. And honestly, if you look at the veterans available in free agency, I think he's got a shot at that either, no matter who they bring in. But, yeah, with Taylor, the question of, you know, can he handle a super high-volume workload? And maybe not even can he handle, but should you be asking him to handle the super heavy workload like that is a good one. I think it could go either way. Like, it's great that you're – It's great that he's going to get all those carries. I think in most games when Jonathan Taylor is rolling, Colts fans wanted to get more, not less. But in terms of the long-term health of the offense and the team, you want him to be in the lineup as long as possible. So that's an interesting thing to think about in terms of not adding a running back at this point.
I had three guys labeled as losers in the draft. Quiddy Pay, Alec Pierce, Will Fries. Boy, there's no way I can say this without sounding stupid. Who's the least loser of all of them? Like, of those three, who do you think maybe I'm being too harsh on?
I think Will Fries is, like, the way this works out for Will Fries, it seems to me, is even if, you know, Matt Gonzalez or Tanner Bordellini ends up being so good that they feel like they can allow Fries to leave in free agency, like, that's still a pretty good outcome for him. You know, he's going to start this year. He's been an ascending player. If he establishes himself, he'll be a really good right guard hitting the market at, you know, right after his rookie contract. I think in general, like, obviously he probably wants to stay with the Colts. Most players want to stay with their original team, but I think long term, it probably hurts him the least in terms of, you know, career prospects and stuff like that. Then I'd probably say Pay, and then Pierce, obviously, I think is the one that you wonder how it's going to affect his workload the most. Although I do think that just based on what we know about A.D. Mitchell as a football player, that maybe jumping to the conclusion, not saying you are, but I saw some people, especially like nationally, not putting Pierce in stuff, like jumping to the conclusion that he's automatically taking that spot is maybe a little bit early, just given, like, the book on Mitchell is that he's super talented but very raw. And guys like that, they sometimes don't play a ton of snaps right away.
Joel A. Erickson from The Star with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Joel, it's a great segue because that's where I was going to go next. A.D. Mitchell gets taken in the second round. You know, they moved down a few spots. They still get their wide receiver. They needed to get their wide receiver. What did you make of the pick? And you alluded a little bit to it there. What do you think? How much can he give them year one? And then on top of all of this, what did you think of the great profanity-laced rant by Chris Ballard after making that pick?
So the pick, and just from a football standpoint, he's explosive. He's all kinds of explosive. I think he can do some of the yak stuff that they need. From what I've seen, it just seems like it's just a question of, can he put it all together? Was he going to be consistent? And like that's a great second round. It's a good second round bet to make, especially when you don't have to. Like the Colts didn't have to get somebody that they knew was going to be a high volume target. I don't think, because you have Michael Pittman Jr. and you have Josh Downs. You can afford to take the swing on a guy who might need to develop and might be sort of a big play guy to start, but maybe you don't get him. You don't get like four catches every week, leading to 68 catches on the year. Like I think the presence of Downs and Pittman helped that. His profanity lace tirade and about some of the stuff. So I get what he's saying. I get what Chris Ballard is saying, that putting stuff out in the public. I know there was one scouting thing that had to do with how Mitchell manages a medical issue. I don't really love that. On the other hand, some of the stuff that gets reported is, it's not so much about trying to tear the player down as it is from a reporting standpoint, explain why a player fell. And because we all know that these teams are talking a lot about the character of these players. It shows up in, just from a Colts perspective, it shows up in the videos they put out. You hear them talking about, work ethic and stuff like that. We know it from just, if you pay attention to the draft, we know from the guys that they do pick how much they value some of their work ethic and stuff like that. And so some of that getting out, it doesn't mean that the player is going to be whatever they were going forward. You'd like for someone to be able to put their name on it. But also, if it's coming from scouts, the team is going to fire them as soon as they have their name on it. So that's why they're anonymous. It's not
right.
They're afraid of what they're saying. It's because the team is going to fire them if they know they're giving that information out.
Joel, is safety or corner the bigger post-draft need?
That's a good question.
Because I feel like the fan base, if I did that as a poll on Twitter, I almost feel like everyone or the majority would say corner. But boy, I sit here and think, man, it might be safety. I mean, Julian Blackman, you only re-signed him for 1 year.
Yeah, it's really tough to pick one. And this is why. I know that sounds like a cop out, but this is why. Both positions are kind of in the same spot where you've got guys there. And the Colts are counting at least on some of them to take another step, the way like a Bernard Raimann did last year, or the way some of the linebackers have in the past, and continue to get better. So you are betting on that. But there's also a lot of reason for uncertainty. Yeah, like you said, Julian Blackman is only signed for one season. He had a career year last year, but he was coming off of two down years precipitated by injury. You have to take that into account. At corner, there are significant injury concerns with Dallas Flowers and Juju Brents at this point. I don't know that means that they're going to be those guys going forward, but it's hard for a player coming off of an Achilles. I don't know how many times we've talked to somebody, in the year after their Achilles or 2 years after, and they're saying, yeah, you don't quite get that last 10% of explosiveness back as fast as everything else. I think Eric Fisher talked about this a lot. Brents had kind of injuries that crept up over and over again. You don't know that that's going to continue to happen, but it could. At safety, you don't have the injury concern as much as you kind of need Nick Cross to take over at free safety, and we don't have a huge sample size of it. We just know the coaching staff was reluctant to put him in the lineup for a while. So I think they need both spots, and maybe it doesn't have to be a front line like we have to put this guy in the starting lineup, but it has to be a guy who's starting caliber in case it doesn't work out. Like, the best example of this, I think, is Rodney McLeod. They signed Rodney McLeod for not a whole lot. He wasn't supposed to be the starter that year because they drafted Cross and wasn't at the beginning. And then when it turned out that Cross wasn't working out, McLeod stepped into the lineup and became that reliable starter that the team needed. If something happens at corner or safety right now, I don't know who that guy is who you can go, okay, we've got somebody who they clearly haven't taken the next step. They're still developmental. We need to replace them with someone we can trust. I don't know who the guy is at either spot to play that role right now.
Joel A. Erickson with us. He's from the Star. We're talking some Colts on the Payless Liquors Hotline on this Tuesday. What does your gut tell you about the fifth-year option with Quiddy Pay? The Colts have a couple days to make that decision. They got Latu, obviously, in the first round of the draft over the weekend. Quiddy Pay, what do you think happens?
So I think $13.4 million is not that bad in terms of it seems like a lot, you know. The Colts do have they kind of always we're used to this. The Colts kind of always have cap space going into the next season available to them. I think when I looked it up, like depends on which, you know, over the cap, spot rack, whichever one you want to look at, roughly $50 million going into next year. Now they have guys to re-sign for sure. I don't think it's going to hurt them from that standpoint. And there's a lot of numbers there for sure. But that would, you know. Like, $13.4 million seems like a lot, but in an era when the best defensive linemen are getting paid high 20s, low 30s per year, it's really not that much. And I do think that they're gonna their play time is going to come down for guys like Ebukam and Pay, who both played more than 700 snaps last year. But maybe the Colts kind of want that. Maybe the Colts kind of want to take some of the load off of those guys and make it a little bit – keep them a little fresher. And I guess when I saw the figure, I thought, you know, I don't think Pay has been exactly what they want in terms of developing into a premier edge rusher. But he is a very good all-around player. And the spot he plays in the defense, the big end, you have to have that guy. I could see them picking it up. The cost doesn't seem as prohibitive at $13 million as it would at, you know, 20 or something like that.
And the deadline for that coming up Thursday for the fifth-year team option for 2025. Quiddy Pay is under contract here for this season. Joel, tremendous stuff all week long. I know it's a busy, busy weekend, so thank you for making time for us here on this Tuesday morning.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
All right, we aren't going to waste any more time, as he did last week on Tuesday ahead of Game 2, and since then his Pacers have won 3 in a row. He is the head coach of the Indiana Pacers ahead of their Game 5 tonight. Rick Carlisle joins us now. Coach, as always, thank you for the time. In your playoff history, what is the psyche like for teams trying to kind of close out a game? How do you compare that to maybe other games in the series and the difficulty that might honestly probably be more mental than anything coming up tonight?
Yeah, there's an old adage that the closeout games are always the most difficult. That's consistently true. We fully expect a Game 7 type environment tonight in Game 5 of this series. You know, this is the 10th time we've played these guys, I think, this season, which is, you know, an incredible number of times. A lot of it obviously had to do with the in-season tournament. There's an extra game there. Then it's a divisional opponent, and then you got a 7-game series. So, that's an environment that's a historic type environment, and it will be great experience for our guys, but our level of concentration and focus has got to be very keen tonight.
Rick Carlisle joining us again. Tonight, it's going to be a late one, at least here on the Eastern time zone, Coach. 9:30 or so, we'll have coverage here on The Fan beginning at 9 o'clock. The answer is probably getting stops in defense, but I'll ask you anyway. How have you guys been able to get the pace up to where you wanted the last three games, and how do you accomplish that same thing tonight?
Yeah, it has most to do with just our overall level of intensity, and we've got to continue that. We had some lags in game four. In the first half, we had many opportunities to keep pressure on them, and just were simply not up enough. And so, you know, tonight we're going to have to be steadfast and vigilant about that. And the challenge is to be aggressive and on the one hand without creating situations where we're sending them into the free throw line, because when a team can score with the clock stopped, that allows them to get their defense set, and those are very difficult situations to generate pace. So, you know, as you get deeper into the series, you understand that at times the game will slow down. But, you know, it's just it's a choice that we have to make, that there are ways to keep the pace the way we need for it to be.
Coach, I saw a pretty crazy stat so far through the playoffs. I think this was exiting your guys' game four on Sunday. You guys had three games of at least 30 assists, 2, 3, and 4. No team in the playoffs besides you guys even have one game with 30 or more assists. What have you seen ball movement wise? You know, that's not just a Haliburton assist. I remember one of those games, your front court, I think all three of them, Nesmith, Siakam, and Turner, all had like at least 6 or 7 assists in that game. So what have you seen ball movement wise since game one that has led to that?
Well, we've seen good things, obviously. You know, game one, I think we only had 20 assists. Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, I think it was around that.
Yeah, so that, you know, and that's a very low number for us. And yeah, it just comes back to the same conversation and discussion, really, is that, you know, we've got to do everything possible to make it hard for them to generate pace, do so without fouling, and keep the ball moving. It, you know, if we come down and become a one situation team on offense, you know, Milwaukee's very good defensively. You know, they will lock into that. And so, you know, our best stuff offensively has come off of pace, multiple passes, movement, and, you know, we've just got to, you know, it's the old adage of trust the pass. But the best situations to do that and generate that are when you're able to get stops and, you know, get the ball over half court quickly and get into your movement.
Obviously, he is Rick Carlisle tonight, game five. And as Andy said, it is a 9:30 tip here. You'll get TNT and Bally action here coming up tonight for game five. Coach, I do want to go back to Friday night for just a second, because, you know, I think over the course of a series, games like that can get lost in the shuffle a little bit. But that sequence in overtime, when you guys had the 5 straight offensive rebounds, I want to say you followed that up with another possession with an offensive rebound that led to a big Andrew Nembhard jumper. What can you say about just honestly almost the teach tape aspect from just strictly the hustle and really grit, for lack of a better word, that you guys showed there in that overtime period where the offense obviously wasn't maybe as smooth as you would like?
Well, it's just simply the desire, you know, to win the game, to regain possession of the ball. I think on the 5 possession sequence, I don't think we even scored, you know,
no.
on our fifth try, you know. So, you know, during the earlier parts of the season when we played Milwaukee, you know, part of the success that we had was crashing the boards, you know, offensively, but doing it in a way that made sense with our system. So, you know, in the game you're talking about, you know, game three, I guess it was, you know, we were just going after it. I mean, it was, the schemes were out the window. I mean, our guys just instinctually knew that we had to pursue the ball and just simply find a way. And so, you know, that's how it went. You know, Tyrese hit an amazing shot, you know, in overtime, to get us over the hump. And then, you know, we finally got Middleton to miss a three, you know, so, but yeah, you know, all in all, this is, you know, a very, very strong willed team that we're playing, a team of great veterans, you know, guys that are available. And look, we don't even know who's going to play tonight. I mean, we could see Lillard, we could see Giannis, you know, we just don't know. We got to be ready for anything. But what they've shown is that, you know, whoever they put out there are competing at, you know, a championship level, and we've got to continue to match that.
Rick Carlisle with us here, Pacers head coach. We get ready for tonight's game. 9 o'clock, the coverage here begins on The Fan. I don't want to look just at his scoring, although his scoring is up, and I'm talking about Andrew Nembhard. Boy, what he's done, especially the last three games. I mentioned scoring 17 assists the last three games, and plus he's playing huge minutes, 40 minutes, 38 minutes. He's playing such great defense. Can you talk about him? How big of a deal? How much, I guess, has he raised his game, coach? And then, I mean, I think this season, this is the best basketball, is it not, that Nembhard's played for you?
Well, at this point, certainly in the postseason, with the significance of these games and everything that he's done, yes. I mean, and it's not been a smooth, easy year for Andrew. I mean, you know, he had some injury challenges, I should say, early in the year. He had, you know, a couple of non-COVID illness thing that took him out of it for a while. You know, a back thing at one point. And so, yeah, he's had to battle, you know, to get back into it. And earlier in the year, you know, our roster was pretty full of guards. You know, we had when Drew was out, you know, we had Bruce Brown, who was starting, and then we had TJ, who had started playing a lot and playing well. And so, you know, battling back into the fray was a big thing. You know, the Siakam trade, obviously, you know, moved Bruce to Toronto. So, you know, there was an opportunity there. And so, you know, Drew has been back into the starting two position, which he was where he was a lot last year. And you know, with that on our team comes the responsibility of some, you know, hellacious defensive challenges. You know, you're playing guys like Lillard. Last game he played Beverly. You know, you're going to get the best point guard on the other team, you know, every night. No negotiation there. And look, he's worked hard on his offensive game. And, you know, one of the other advantages to having him on the floor with Tyrese is it gives you a second ball handler, second attacker, allows us to move Ty off the ball. So, look, you know, all these things have been real positives, and a lot of growth from a young player, you know. And so, you know, the work goes on.
3-1 tonight. The work does go on. Tonight they go for the clinch. 9:30 coming up here. Game 5 from Milwaukee. And Rick Carlisle joins us here. Coach, I think of all the things I've been most impressed about your team over these last three games might have been seen on Sunday. And that was the, 4-3, 40-yard dash time of Coach Jenny Busick to get in the middle of Andrew Nembhard and Bobby Portis. That was quite impressive from your assistant coach. The blonde blur, I saw, is what people have been describing her in her efforts there to make sure calmer bodies prevailed, at least from the Pacer side of things.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with her. She's tough. And, this recently came out. It's like she grew up in Nashville and was a great high school player in Nashville. They had the all 90s team, and she was one of the top players on the all 90s team out of Tennessee. And you gotta remember, at that time, that was when Tennessee women's basketball was in their heyday. That was Pat Summitt, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, she's a legendary former player. Her career in the WNBA got cut short due to injury. She was in kind of a Walter Mitty camp with the Cleveland Rockers. There were 400 women that were trying out for two spots on the Cleveland Rockers, and she was one of the two that survived it. And she actually experienced a broken sacrum during that season, and was unaware that had happened, and actually continued to play with it. So we're talking about a tough woman here, and obviously someone that's very very high level in the coaching department, been a big part of what what we've done this year, and really appreciate her. And I think fearless is a word that I would use to describe her.
Rick Carlisle with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. As a follow-up to that, how much of the pregame conversation that you're going to have with the players is about not taking the bait from a guy like Bobby Portis if things get physical again tonight?
Yeah, I'm not going to get into details about pregame stuff. But look, we fully expect that this is going to be an emotional situation tonight. I just fully believe it's going to be a game seven atmosphere. Game sevens are the ultimate. I don't know how many I've been involved with. There've been a lot because I was with Boston as a player for a few years, and then I've been involved in a lot of them in my coaching career too. And it's the ultimate game, so we have the privilege of experiencing that in a game five. We're going to have to be able to control and regulate our emotions, in any kind of situation like this. And so we'll talk a little bit about that, but it's not going to come down to a personal thing about any one guy. This is an approach, to how your process has to be in these types of situations. So this will be a great, great challenge. We'll look forward to it. The environment will be spectacular tonight.
Coach, you expect Tyrese to be good to go with that back injury?
Hope so. He came on the injury report before the game on Sunday with some back stiffness, and so he was able to work through it and obviously play. We kept his minutes. We were able to keep his minutes lower in that game, which I think is was an important thing. And so we'll hope that he's able to go tonight. I know if he can, he will. But if it turns out he can't, then it'll be a next man up situation. So we'll have to wait and see. We've got a long day to prepare for it. We're looking forward to the challenge.
Again, tonight the Pacers go for their first playoff series win in 10 years, 3-1 up right now on the Milwaukee Bucks. Coach, like last Tuesday, can't thank you enough for joining us on a game day. Good luck tonight. And hopefully we're talking about a series coming up next week with you.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Good morning to Coach Malloy here as we are getting into more of Laiatu Latu and the draft pick for the Colts at 15 overall. Coach, I got to start here. I'm a little nervous to ask, and we cannot thank you enough. Are you out in the West Coast right now? Is it really 6:30 local time and you agreed to do this call?
Yeah, actually, I'm actually finishing up my worship walk. I kind of walk around the campus and get my mind right and clear before I get here. But I usually get in about 5:30. I just want to make sure I'm here before any players in case someone like Latu wants to watch film.
now would Latu have been a guy showing up at the crack of dawn?
Always. He actually still does it, on the off season. I'm talking about getting prepared for the draft. He was in the training rooms, our training rooms, at 6 a.m. So he would do his treatment. He did his workout with Eddie in terms of his pass rush and getting ready for the combine. Then he would come back in the afternoon, get more treatment. And then by 4 o'clock when I started to do my workouts, he was back in the weight room. So I think the Colts organization did a great job in terms of evaluating him. I think you guys will be proud as Colts fans of the person you're about to get.
Coach, thank you so much for joining us. I heard yesterday you were on with our afternoon guy, and you told this story, and I want you to tell it again, and maybe we'll have some follow-ups. But, you know, Latu's story is really amazing. He's told back, you know, around 2020 with Washington, hey, you can't play. And then he basically had to move on from football, right? And you had the conversation, you know, with him of, you know, do you want to become a firefighter? And what are you going to do next kind of in your life? And then you fast forward a couple years later, you're at UCLA, and he finally gets cleared and he goes on the field and he does what he does. But can you tell us at the very beginning where you guys found out, hey, this is not a stinger, you are really injured here, he could not get cleared, and then you guys kind of make the voyage to UCLA, and Coach, the rest is history. He ends up being a first round draft pick over the weekend.
Yeah, so, you know, he had a stinger in practice. After we pulled him out and we told him he could just relax for the rest of practice. The next morning, I had to call the doctor and said that stinger, what we thought was a stinger, is still there. His arms are numb. So they ended up taking him to get an MRI and found out he had a neck injury. Through that process and in that surgery, the doctors then thought he, you know, they deemed him unable to play athletically anymore. And obviously, when you talk to an 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid who just played as a true freshman, that'll be hard for him to handle. So that being said, he went through a really dark time. You know, we did not let him with the team meetings or the position meetings. He wasn't lifting with the players. And I think that's when our relationship grew a little bit because, you know, we kind of started our own Bible study. And in my mind, I was trying to make sure I can help him move forward. And at the time, you know, he told me that one of the things that he did like was being a fireman. And so I was trying to get him hooked up with the Seattle Fire Department and see if they can do like a shadow ship or something like that. But while we're going through all this, you know, he kept telling his mom, I'm not done with football. And, you know, at one point in time, I think mom even called and said, I don't think this kid's going to be done. In fact, I don't know if it's to spite me or to prove himself right, he went out for the rugby team and he started playing rugby. So he's sending pictures and the kids around the team are telling me, Coach, he's actually right on the other field and he's playing rugby. So, you know, he calls and like, Coach, I'm doing contact without pads. So why can't I play football? So in his mind, he was set that somehow, some way he was going to make this happen. So from there, mom and I had to change our mindset. You know, if the kid's going to believe that, then we have to work forward in doing that. Fast forward, I get let go from University of Washington and I go to UCLA, and mom, myself, and Lyle, we still try to find a doctor to clear him. You know, we took him to the Seahawks. They wouldn't clear him. There's a player at Georgia who ended up having the exact same injury, goes to the NFL. That doctor would not clear him. So lo and behold, we find a doctor in California that clears him. So while I'm at UCLA, I tell Chip Kelly, I say, Coach, do you mind at least taking these MRIs and seeing if our team doctor will accept it and have Liatu join us at UCLA? And so I give him the doctor's name, and Coach Kelly goes, are you sure that's the doctor? And I said, I'm positive. Why, do you know him? And he said, that's our team doctor. And so that's what brought him, you know, because we were able to clear him and I was already there. That's what brought him to UCLA. You know, so obviously we're crying on the phone and we got him here. Now when he's here, the doctor made sure there were steps and precautions that he was going to take. I mean, he had no contact through spring, no contact through fall camp. So his first contact was actually the first game of his career. So if you can imagine a person that is telling, now you're telling, hey, you got another shot, you just can't do no contact. And you watch this kid on off-season workouts. I mean, it was hard. His mindset is so different. You know, like when they're doing practice, he was on the sideline sprinting. Like he couldn't stop moving because in his mind, if they're practicing, I'm practicing. I don't care if I do it on air. You know, I don't care if I do it in the weight room. But somehow, some way, as long as they're working out, I'm going to work out. And then on Saturdays, I think that was probably the more impressive thing. On Saturdays, and especially in college, we all know there's a lot of distraction that goes on Saturdays. He was out here. 9 o'clock in the morning, working pass rush. You know, so as the season goes on, we play game one. I think that was the moment in time where we kind of say, hey, we got a shot. You know, he hit somebody in the first play. He looked at me. I looked at him. He kind of shrugged and I'm like, well, okay, so that's pretty cool. I guess we can keep going, right? And then I think game five, we played University of Washington. So I knew he'll be emotional about that particular game. I think he ended up with like 3 sacks or whatnot. But I think at that moment, as we're walking in the locker room, you're like, Coach, I'm ready. I think I'm ready. Like, I'm going to take the next step forward. And from there, you really saw him take off. Like, his, you know, he has a mantra that he tells himself every day. It's LYL, like your last. And to me, the best way I can explain to you Liatu's mindset is if somebody told you this will be your last day on earth, like, how are you going to treat this day? Well, that's the kid's mentality every single day. There is not a rep that goes by that he doesn't want. And that's why I think he fits not only in your organization, but at that next level. You know, I'll give you a story. We're practicing and we're towards the ending of the year. And at this point, my job is to make sure I get him to Saturday. You know, so I pull him out and I put the backups in and I can feel somebody breathing on my neck. And so I turn around and say, Liatu, I said, bro, what are you doing? And he said, Coach, I got to be on the field. They're going to practice. I'm going to practice. He said, no, Liatu, I got to get you to Saturday. Saturday is where you perform. So lo and behold, those guys are done. And the way we do it under your last rack, you sprint to the end zone. While behind me, this guy slaps me and takes off running. And he tells me, like, Coach, I'm going to get it in no matter what. So you might as well put me back in. And that's him. Like, he values and treasures every single rep he could possibly get. You know, the pass rush part of it, I think that's what everybody's starting to recognize him for. What people appreciated in the fall, you know, I got to appreciate on Saturday mornings beginning in January. In January, he was out there pass rushing, and it kind of became a contagious thing. And before you know it, the whole D-line was out there, which I think had a huge effect on our success as a front. But more importantly, like holidays, you know, there's holidays coming up in May, June. So we send the kids home. His mom had to drive from Sacramento to visit her son. Like, he wouldn't leave the complex. He's like, Coach, I don't have weights at Sacramento. I don't have a field at Sacramento. So I'm going to stay here. And so the mom and I, we just keep laughing at this kid. But so what, when he got drafted, you know, we were in a green room and the mom and I are just talking from the first official visit at the University of Washington through the injury, through his journey. And now we're saying, gosh, we actually might make our dreams a reality. And lo and behold, he becomes not only drafted in the first round, but the first defensive player picked in the draft. And I think at that moment, that was a proud parent moment for myself, as well as mom, his family, because, you know, in my opinion, I mean, I think somebody should make a movie of this, because this is like a story. It's very Rudy-ish, so to speak, where, you know, it's such an inspirational thing, but, you know, in his mind, like, that's just how he lives in life. Like, he never wants to take anything else for granted because of what happened in the injury.
It is certainly a hell of a story. Great, great stuff here from Akaika Malloy, again, the defensive coordinator at UCLA, and he was the position coach at Washington before that. Obviously, a tremendously close relationship with Liatu Liatu, the Colts' 15th overall pick. Coach, I want to share this quote. I was talking to a member of the Colts staff, and they sent me this about Liatu. He goes, there's guys who say they love football, then there's Liatu, who literally had it taken away and had to scratch and claw to get it back. Literally took matters into his own hands to get back on the field. I think that is what is special about this dude and what should be highlighted. When you hear that quote, what do you think about?
100%. Exactly right. I mean, I actually, this is weird to say this, but while his stay here, his sophomore and junior year, I actually had to try to encourage him to do something else other than football.
Yeah, he's, you know, like, told us he has no interest other than football.
That's it. I mean, I would call him on Sunday and say, hey, what you doing? He goes, oh, just watching film. He had his iPad with him. And I'm like, bro, go do something. Like, go, you know, you live about 2 miles from the beach. Maybe, no, I'm good. And that's his mindset. Like, Coach hit it right on the head. I mean, or whoever had that quote, that's exactly who you guys will get, you know, at the Colts organization. You know, yesterday, I think your crew actually asked me about a comparison to the NFL. To the detail of how he pass rushes, I'm going to be really mindful of what I'm saying and who I'm comparing it to, but I think he takes it to the level of Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack. His energy on the field, though, I think it's Max Crosby. You know, the intensity that Max Crosby plays with, and he plays with a nonstop reckless abandon until he gets to where he needs to get to. And I really believe that's what you guys will see. And the beauty for it, for me, I told him, I said, Liatu, you actually walk into a program that has a great front already. I mean, like, I'm from Hawaii, so DeForest Buckner, I mean, I knew him growing up all the way, and I thought about the, you know, Kiripe, the wisdom that they already have there. I said, you know, it's just going to add value to what you already have, and, you know, I think you're going to be something special for that franchise.
Coach, one thing that's really stood out to me about Latios, I mentioned this to our listeners earlier today. First off, you guys used him in a variety of ways, like both sides of the line in college. You know, when you ask him to describe his own game, he quickly mentions the variety of pass rush moves he has. But more than even that, which is very impressive to me, it seems like he's kind of an artist and has really embraced the science behind preparing for offensive lines week in and week out. Like, you know, he's not just some speed rusher that dominated poor competition in college. I feel like he really has embraced the art to pass rushing. Is that something you have observed in him?
That's actually what I call him. I call him the artist. And the reason I said it, because I'm going to repeat what you said. It is not just the get off. At some times, if you actually watch him, you would say his get off is actually slower than most. But because he studies so much film in two steps, he's gonna know what side you're gonna give him and then what move he will execute. So he practices this obviously on Saturdays, and when he watches film, then he goes out and he tries to prepare for that certain individual. Now, when he does that, right, in his mind, this is the best of the best, then he puts them in categories. So this is, you know, next week's opponent, that'll be in this category. Next week, the following opponent, that'll be in this category. So all of the moves he's working is really specific to that position. And then because of that, we were able to move him all across the board. If at the time we think that is the best matchup for us, we will put him at a three technique. Sometimes we'll put him at the zero or the shade. And he has no problem not only pass rushing there, but he's learned to play run technique from those positions. Because, you know, when we're on a third down, we have four linebackers on the field. So if they go no huddle, if they convert it, obviously they'll go no huddle. They got what they think is the better personnel. And Laiatu has learned how to play defensive tackle in case that happens. So he's really well-rounded, but he takes pass rushing to just a whole nother level and just studying. I mean, I got every single clip for him from practice to game because that's all he does. He'll open his own folder and start studying himself, and then he'll open every other folder and start studying somebody else.
Very, very impressive.
That's great.
Quite the story of Laiatu Latu and getting more into that here with Ikaika Maloy from UCLA. Coach, I know it's super early. I know for you this might not be too early, but we cannot thank you enough for the time this morning. And I know conference expansion, especially for you guys, you might not love everything that's coming with it, but I guess in a small way, you might get to see Latu maybe here coming. I think next year maybe you guys are at IU, maybe at Purdue here coming up, so maybe you'll get to see one of your prized possessions here coming up.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.